Hey everybody, welcome back to Elder Speak Interviews. It has been quite a long time since our last interview here, but we're back, a long belated appearance here, and helping us get us back into the swing of things here, I have two of the lead members of Cygra Games here. They're going to be telling us about their new title coming out very, very soon. It's called Dark Scavenger. So with me here is Alex Gold, the project lead, and Jim Odermott, the lead programmer for the project. Hey guys.
Yo.
Thanks for being on with us. Thanks for bringing the game here, or bringing the information about the game.
Of course.
All right, so you did your initial press release here, but for those that missed it, shame on them, first of all, but give us a little bit about Dark Scavenger.
All right. Dark Scavenger is it's kind of a bizarre hybrid of game genres, I guess you could say. It's a turn-based RPG with a lot of point-and-click adventure mechanics, or I guess if I were to reverse the role of what I just said, it's a point-and-click adventure game with turn-based battles. That sounds a little more accurate. It's really bizarre. I think that's the best way to describe it, is really bizarre.
A little bit of dark.
A lot of dark, actually, yeah.
Well, what do you,
the title.
Why do you go into that a little bit? Because when a lot of developers say dark fantasy, all they're really going to say is we're making the human characters assholes. So what does dark fantasy mean for you guys?
Oh, geez. This is a can of worms with this particular title. When we say dark fantasy, we're not just necessarily talking about the fact that the quote-unquote human characters are assholes. A, there aren't a lot of human characters, and B, the darkness really comes from, I guess, the context of the whole thing. There's a lot of very twisted things you can do in the game, in twisted scenarios that you just end up getting yourself into. It starts off as kind of a lighthearted fantasy adventure, and slowly, can't give too much away here, but slowly turns into something that's not quite that, I guess you can say.
It definitely goes non-family friendly.
Definitely non-family friendly. We also like to do the thing where, you know, we include little references or plays on words that would go over, say, your 11-year-old child's head, but a slightly older audience would catch on to, you know, the other meanings of these words. And yeah, there's some pretty strange allusions in there, let's just say.
Sounds fantastic. Now, taking a look at the screenshots here, people know that calling it a dark fantasy, at least from what we've seen so far, may not totally encapsulate the game, because there do seem to appear to be some environments taking place in outer space locations. Why don't you tell us a little bit about where the story is going to take you, because it doesn't seem to be just a couple towns in random medieval fantasy land.
Oh, yeah, sure. This is so this is the other thing about this game, is we have been advertising this dark fantasy, mm-hmm. but truth be told, it has a lot of sci-fi elements as well. The story in a nutshell is you're kind of playing as this character who's part of an intergalactic space crew. There may have been some redundancy there. You basically land on this planet, and this planet is inhabited by, say, a lot of, you know, fantasy-type characters. However, you're the sci-fi dudes from the future, and you're bringing that sci-fi element to this fantasy world, and the strange mixture of, the strange clashing of I guess, cultures and technology between your initial player character and the fantasy world itself is a very interesting dynamic and something we like to exploit narratively a lot. But yeah, it definitely, I would say a sci-fi game with a lot of strong fantasy elements would be a much cleaner way to describe it, perhaps.
Yeah. The sci-fi, like the strict sci-fi, environments are sort of end caps to the wandering around in the, amongst the, like, the planet below that falls into the sort of fantasy category.
Seemed pretty concise to me. So, talking about your action-adventure and RPG hybrid here, how is that going to manifest in how players actually control the experience? Is it going to be kind of like a Baldur's Gate thing, point and then click and maneuver the characters that way? Or is it going to be more of almost like a Zork throwback where you're just typing in commands to move directions? How are you actually going to be interacting with the environment?
It's kind of like both, and it's kind of like neither. Is that helpful?
That's very concise.
Thank you. I thought so. We've basically streamlined the entire experience. You don't actually have a little player icon mm-hmm. present on the screen at any point. There's some situations where it looks like the environment, the NPCs you're encountering are talking directly to you in like kind of a first-person perspective. But the majority of the game takes place in kind of a bird's-eye view where you can see your entire environment. And all you have to do to interact with your environment is just click on different pieces. And sometimes we throw in these kind of missed elements, too, where a lot of the pieces will be kind of hidden, and you'll have to really explore with your mouse a little bit or unlock different parts of the area by going to other parts of the game world, and then you'll be able to find all the different environment events. However, once you actually stumble into one of these environment events, it becomes very, very text very text-based, I guess a little akin to I guess Zork-style gameplay in the sense that, you're not actually writing in commands. It's more or less, I guess, Baldur's Gate-style. I keep comparing these games
yes.
to this a lot.
There's pick a conversation direction. You have choices of various dialogue bits.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't specifically a typing thing, but there definitely isn't, like, use rock or open door, that kind of stuff. I like to consider it closer to Ancient Mansion.
Ooh.
There's things going on the screen, but you don't necessarily have to control them specifically yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But like any of the conversations themselves are just clicked through, like. Pick a choice.
Okay. Yeah, makes complete sense here. Now, speaking on the dialogue system specifically and the branching paths therein, it's one of your Dark Scavengers highly hyped mechanics here. How deep is this kind of multi-tiered narrative going to go through? How far-reaching are these choices you're going to make in the game progress throughout the narrative? How much are they going to progress?
This is where it gets pretty intense, actually, because the majority of our gameplay does indeed revolve around the narrative aspects and the text aspects. So things you do early on in the game are going to affect things that happen later on in the game, as one would expect. But for example, if you happen to maybe anger this NPC in, say, this early part of the game, you will indeed meet that NPC again later in the game, except based on your actions earlier, they may, instead of helping you, try to kill you. And there's a lot of really twisted things, or a lot of really unique things that we do within the events themselves, since basically the game is a series of nonlinear encounters. For example, you might get to one particular scenario where a bandit leader is drowning two bandits in a lake, and Jim knows what I'm talking about. And in this scenario, you can A, charge at the bandits with your swords flying, and what will happen is the bandit leader will pull those two bandits out of the lake and send them both out at you to attack you, or you can talk to the bandit leader, install him, and while he's distracted talking to you, he accidentally drowns his bandits in the lake, which means you can get past that event without even getting into battle completely.
Kind of a morbid way of combat avoidance there.
Oh, it gets a lot worse.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
That's one of the more tame ways of avoiding combat. But, like, part of one of the things we strive for is making it so that you don't actually have to fight anyone.
Mm. Correct.
You can, like, sometimes it's a little, you have to work at it in some cases, but every sort of event that could lead to a battle could also just lead to getting through it without getting in a fight at all.
Mm. So could one theoretically pass through the entire game without fighting a soul?
Correct.
Oh, that is, in fact, our goal with the writing.
Yeah.
It is very hard, mind you. you will not do it on your first playthrough.
Right.
However, Not only is it possible to skip every single enemy encounter without getting into battles, because keep in mind, there's an entire dialogue tree guaranteed for every encounter with enemies. It is possible to skip every single boss fight in the game.
Yeah.
Which is, to skip the boss fights, by the way, it requires a crazy, it's difficult, let's just say that, but it is possible. So yes, you could theoretically get through the entire game without engaging in a single combat.
Is this kind of ability judged by experience points put into certain skills? Like, one could avoid the final boss fight in, I think it was Fallout 1, based on a skill level, or is it just specific dialogue selections?
It's the player's wit, actually. It is, we've done away, in fact, the game is, it's a little unconventional in the sense, because you don't really progress in the same manner as most RPGs. You don't level up, per se. You gain a lot of new equipment, and that equipment is what you use to become more powerful. But as far as actually getting out of battles, it's all about talking to the right NPCs and making the right choices, and,
using the right inventory items.
Yes, that's the key right there, is when you're in certain situations, like, say, an enemy's coming at you, and he's going to stab you with a big sword. If you have a shield, you can actually open up your inventory, and if you have any shield, period, you can use that shield and say, this is during the event itself, deflect the enemy's sword, for example, and maybe get out of combat that way. So it's also about having the right inventory items at the right moments.
Now, your inventory system is also one of your game's hype features. Hundreds of weapons you could supposedly obtain there. Why don't you talk a little bit about that? How do you acquire weapons? How else do they factor into the meat of the gameplay?
Sure. Okay, so the method in acquiring weapons is a little bit... basically ties into the narrative itself. As the player controls a quote-unquote dark scavenger, hence the title, the way that you actually make equipment is by walking around through the environment. Maybe you have interactions with with enemies, maybe interactions with the environment, but you collect stuff from everything. And everything that you collect, you bring to your fellow dark scavengers who make, like, let's just say... you find a weird tree in the middle of the forest, and you climb up to the top of the tree during the event, and you grab a net. Like, theoretically, that event's probably not in the game, right? But anyway...
Of course not.
Of course not. So anyway, you take this net back to your spaceship, and you show it to your other crewmates, known as the crafters, and every crafter, there's three of them in total, can make you a different thing. One of them can make weapons, one of them can make items, and one of them can make allies. So that being said, you can take that old net and give it to any one of those three, and each of them will make you something different out of that old net. So since there's got to be close to 50, 60 different pieces of loot in the game, if you multiply that number by three, that is roughly the amount of equipment that is possible for the player to obtain in the game.
So then a player, through one playthrough, cannot obtain all the weapons you have featured in the game, regardless of the time spent in that playthrough.
Correct.
Very, very much correct.
Okay. Well, another facet of the replayability there. Go a bit more into your party here. How many is in your party throughout the game, and are they all part of your original Dark Scavenger crew?
Well, there is, without giving too much away narratively, there's a reason that you are actually thrust into this alien world away from your fellow Dark Scavengers. You're thrust into it alone. And so basically, you don't really travel with anyone. It is just you versus everything that you could possibly encounter on this extremely hostile alien planet.
Thing that you get to party members is allies, where you can use them to, say, run and distract enemies or, you know, climb up to the top of things that you don't feel like climbing up, diving into lakes so that you don't have to swim. So you kind of have expendable friends.
We should mention your allies are going to die horrible deaths a lot.
Yes.
And by horrible deaths. Oh, yeah. really horrible deaths.
So they're like lemmings.
They can be. That would be an excellent analogy. Mm-hmm. Except you tried to save the lemmings was the thing.
Not every playthrough. I don't know about you guys, but that was never the goal for me. I mean, you only had to save one in some levels, so the rest are just, you know, free reign.
That's very true, but the difference there is that you do indeed have to save your beast one to complete the level. Dark Scavenger, we never tell the player to kill any allies, but sometimes there's a puzzle that needs to be solved, and it looks like having an ally impale himself on his spike over here might be the best solution, possibly. I don't know. It's up to the player to decide at that point.
So do you actually set up situations where it would appear that an ally sacrifice is needed, but in actual practice, the solution's much more simple?
The answer to that question is a little... You can solve a lot of these puzzles different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you use an ally as fodder. Sometimes you use yourself, which, you know, could cause damage to you.
Usually causes damage.
Yeah, usually causes damage. or you could, like, use a weapon or an item to get through the thing. And that's where the sort of branching mechanism comes into play. And a lot of the later events have a ridiculous amount of messages and branching elements.
So is there a kind of a cap on the amount of allies available to you in the game? Can you theoretically kill every single possible ally you can ever have in the game?
Well, here's the thing about the allies. Mm-hmm. And this is maybe a mean thing to say as far as the poor allies are concerned, mm-hmm. but as far as the player's concerned, allies are a tool just like any weapon or item. And we don't really go into a ton of depth, even though there is a legitimate reason why this is possible, but it is possible to say, like, you have an ally who has three uses. That does mean, in theory, you could kill that ally in a horrible way three times. In each area, yes. Of course, there are ways of actually restoring your allies. And as with any of your equipment, which has I should also mention, all of your equipment has a limited amount of durability,
mm-hmm.
which means it can only be used a certain number of times in each chapter of the game. However, at the completion of each chapter, you'll end up all of this equipment, allies included, will become restored. So, yes, it is. If we have an ally at the beginning of the game who has three uses, it is technically possible to kill that ally. Over, I guess it'd be around 15 times by the end of the game. Yeah.
Fantastic. So even your allies kind of have like that old D&D Dungeons & Dragons wand theory behind it, where it's like limited use per day, but at the end of each cycle, they restore, they come back to life. How morbid.
Now we're starting to really cover the darker aspects of Dark Scavenger.
There is a lot of morbidity in the game, but how is that kind of device treated? Is it very much a dark humor, or is it treated with a bit more seriousness than we normally see?
Oh man, we should have totally gone the serious route, and every single time you kill an ally, it should just been like the darkest, grossest mess.
Okay, it's tongue-in-cheek, very much so.
It's a very humorous game. It pokes fun at itself a lot. It pokes fun at a lot of random things. That was a great explanation. But
Video game aesthetics and themes, or just themes in general?
Oh, everything. There are a few video game references in here, of course. They're a little subtle. But it pokes fun at a lot of... I can't really say political. No, why would I? No, that's stupid. Anyway, it's a funny game. It's funny.
No political humor at all.
No political humor.
Okay.
None. Period.
Okay. I don't know. Yeah, I kind of agree with Jim. Maybe if you had an ally killed, you really should have done it all serious, where you have to go and tell their families and attend their funerals. I think that would have been you're treating it tongue-in-cheek is probably the better option for gameplay reasons. It might get depressing otherwise.
Oh, I mean, there is some depressing stuff in the game, but it doesn't come from sacrificing allies. Killing your friends in game should be funny every time you do it.
I quite agree. But there is going to be some moments where there is some sort of emotional pull to them.
Yeah, actually, so as I said, the game starts off really lighthearted. I mean, despite like a Grimm's fairy tale lighthearted. Mm-hmm. So pretty nasty, but funny. However, later on, it starts taking a little bit of a turn, I guess you could say. And I won't give anything away, but the story isn't really meant to start, I guess, having that sort of emotional impact until you're a bit into the game. And I, once again, can't give anything away, but the way that the story is told and the way that some of the key characters are developed and then destroyed, we do it in kind of a unique manner, I guess you could say. I can't promise that it's going to tug at your heartstrings, but it is definitely something that at certain points of the game you will not be taking quite as tongue-in-cheek, I guess you could say.
I still get, while playing through some of the newer stuff, I still end up getting, stunned. Sometimes feel bad for some of the decisions I'm making while playing the game, and sometimes not.
Oh, yeah. I don't like using the word guilty pleasure at all, but you should sometimes feel really bad about the things that you do in the game, but probably are going to laugh about it because of how incredibly wrong it is. So that is the goal. That is what we're trying to go for the majority of it.
Now, you don't actually see this kind of narrative turn in video games as much as other medium here. You can argue, there's a lot of American McGee's Alice, and a lot of the earlier adventure games have this kind of dark humor, but never to the degree that you're saying here. So what is your inspiration in taking that route with your story? Are you drawing from any video games or any other mediums in particular for influence, or is this really just trying your hardest from your own imagination?
Well, actually, yeah, there are a few influences. One of those influences, of course, is one of my favorite games ever, Earthbound, for the Super Nintendo.
Now you got the EGs interested. That is, yeah, that's one of the favorites.
So good, but one of the. One of the things that Earthbound does in that game, and they just do it so well, is having kind of a really comical, goofy story, mm-hmm. and then just making it the most effed up thing that has ever happened in anything ever by the end of the game, where you can't even believe what you're doing and what this lighthearted story has turned into. And I guess I can't not say that we're... we're doing things a little differently than Earthbound, but that is definitely where some of that that narrative arc comes from.
So definitely more Earthbound than say I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream.
Yeah, that's fair.
Although do you have some kind of ask, or could people dispatch their allies to the degree of just messed up this that you can find in I Have No Mouth? Is there ways that kind of border on that kind of level of gruesomeness?
I'm not really sure. I haven't played that game in great detail, Blasphemy, I know.
Oh, no, none of us have. We're still talking about it decades after, but none of us have played it for quite some time.
Okay, that's fair. I'm not sure, but I could definitely tell you that the ways that we allow the player to gruesomely murder their allies / best friends in the game is there's a lot of variety. How about that?
Sounds good. You can kill them lightheartedly, or you can kill them in a bit more darker sense. That kind of way?
Well, and sometimes the darker does sneak up on you.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it, in fact.
Okay.
We like to kind of lead you different places, and then do something that you weren't quite expecting. Throw something at the end of that path that maybe you weren't quite expecting.
Okay. I think we've covered this, the story as much as we can without going into spoiler territory here. But sure. I know you guys brought on Joe Kelly as your music specialist here. And if people check out the gameplay videos now, you don't have the battle music integrated yet. But if you can give us a little preview of what to expect with Kelly's soundtrack, especially for the battle tunes. That'd be great.
Yeah. So Kelly is amazing. He is very talented, and what he has done is actually some of our influences have come from some of the Saga Frontier series, namely Saga Frontier 2, which is very obscure. Most people haven't played it, but what Saga Frontier 2 did that we're also kind of doing is in different sections of the game, there would be different battle themes, different boss themes even, depending on what environment you're in, depending on what like kind of atmosphere the game was trying to provide. And something we do for this game, Dark Scavenger, is we have a bunch of different themes. So, for example, there's one centralized battle theme with a very specific melody, something that is supposed to be really catchy so that you remember it. However, depending on what chapter you are currently in, that battle theme will have kind of a remix that will kind of change. And same goes with the boss themes. And there's also specific themes for very important characters as well. So if there's a specific NPC that you'll run across multiple times who's a very significant character, if you have to fight said NPC, he'll have his own theme when you battle him.
Oh, okay. And you also say that you do have an overarching score for the chapters, and each chapter there is sort of a different lead instrument to it?
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. For example, like if you're in kind of a like, let's just say you're inside, like, a fortress, and it's, like, a really messy fortress, and there's bandits all over the place throwing wild parties. Let's just say maybe it'll be kind of, like, a more jubilant kind of feel to it, maybe some, like, guitar leading or some guitar going on. But then suddenly the next moment you're on you're on the rooftop of the castle, and it's raining and it's windy, and then we have this epic string, this kind of string accompaniment to this particular theme. So, yeah, that kind of thing, I guess.
Now, moving again from music here, going to Noah Berkeley's art, there's definitely a lot of variety in terms of the environments, not just in their actual what's going on, the themes of them or whatnot, but how they're portrayed. The view is different. The camera, for lack of a better term, position is different. What led to that decision? How did you guys come to that to branch out not just the aesthetic but the viewpoint?
Sure. lots and lots of discussion. We ultimately decided to we didn't want it quite as top down as say Zelda, but maybe not quite as isometric as say Landstalker. But we wanted kind of something with a unique feel that would immediately allow the player to see the entire environment, all the interactive objects that would be overlaid within it, and easily see the doorways in and out. So it basically that particular art style came out of just necessity for what we were trying to portray.
Oh, yeah, okay. A lot of them actually remind me of the actual maps that would come in with the Dungeons and Dragons starter sets, where you have the entire layout present within either an overhead or a canted angle, and then you would have the entire environment open to you within that one frame. So it looks fantastic. You guys didn't have just Noah on for art. Who actually contributed? Who are all your artists?
Oh boy, Jim, do you have a list?
I can throw names at it.
Sure.
Sean Lane.
Just throw names. Yes.
Right. Sean Lane, Sean Kearney, Reiko. I don't know Reiko's name.
Rakami. If I got that wrong, she's not gonna like me for that. Matt Durso, and Isla Richards, and God, I know there's some artists we're forgetting, and that. Said artist is going to be just so angry at us after this. Oh God, this is pressure.
Justin Sinise has done.
Justin Sinise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
no.
So what is having so many artists producing work within similar structure for the game? How has that contributed to the game's overall art style?
It's very interesting. We were able to match up artists, say, mainly on character art, who kind of had a style that they could work off each other, and a style that like a style that looked similar enough to each other that there wouldn't be too much inconsistency. For the backgrounds, though, or for the chapters, should I say, there's multiple pieces of art per chapter. So, like, we would have, say, Sean Lane doing this chapter, and maybe Reiko doing this chapter, Noah doing this chapter. So, since these chapters were basically entire separate entities of art within themselves, it was a lot easier to say, all right, if this artist wants to do this chapter, this style, let's just let them go for it in their own style. And so, of course, we had to have one artist per chapter. But that artist was basically allowed to just go with it at their own style and just you know, go crazy as far as what they – how they wanted to represent it through their own art.
Okay. What is your expected release pattern for Dark Scavenger? What platforms are you coming out for? What's your expected cost and whatnot?
We're looking at we're going to be releasing on PC for sure through our website, which is www.darkscavenger.com. We're looking but we're also looking into various distributors and in addition PC base, of course. In addition, we're still talking about it, porting it to potentially the Android and also the iPad in the future. So yes.
All right. So, and would that be just a direct port of the PC version, or will you try to add additional features for the touch screens or iOS?
Well, we'll probably have to change a few interface things, I would imagine, for a touch screen version. Right. But generally, it would probably be a feature port.
Mm-hmm. And to talk about you guys in Cyber Games in particular, a lot of you guys are industry veterans. You've been with quite a few studios over the years, and is this a project of passion, or how did this actual production and studio come about?
It created itself when I was unemployed and needed something to do, and Alex was looking for a outlet for this particular idea that had been mulling around in his head. We kind of whipped through a tech demo fairly quickly because I had an engine that I already made laying around. But at that point, it was like programmer art. And once we brought on Sean Kearney to actually make us some pretty pictures, which kind of encouraged us that we could actually get something out of this other than just amusing ourselves.
Go ahead, Alex. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, we were originally going to make this game with stick figures and just say, look at this fun project that we're putting together. It's going to have funny dialogue and good code. And then, as Jim said, the moment we got an artist, it was just like, oh, my God, we could actually make something like that isn't a stick figure game.
Yeah.
That was a great example, but yes.
Yes. Well said.
It was cool.
So is what the game?
Thank you.
Yeah. Is what the release version of the game, the final build of the game, is that going to be running on that same engine you created, Jim, or is it still a proprietary engine?
Yeah, it's something I made from the ground up. Joe has actually been helping with me with the coding the last month, but up until that point, it was just me hammering things out. Since I got a job at Lolaps here in San Francisco.
Hey, I'm in East Bay. I'm not too far from you.
Excellent. I've had to kind of push my time on the project to weekends, which is why, you know, Joe helping on the code has, you know, pushed the final code date a lot closer. But at this point, the code is mainly is fairly close to completion, and we're finishing up design spots, a handful of bugs, getting a little bit of art in, and just finishing up this sort of polish test for all of the 73 different items that are in the game or something like that. There's a very large number. Yeah. and some of them require specific code for them.
So has this entire production been a spare time weekend ordeal? How long has this this game been in the oven, as it were?
We started it back in October.
Oh, okay.
And yep. the first month, I was doing it full time, and then I had a temp job, so I was doing it half time.
Mm-hmm.
Alex has been a real trooper, and I'm like putting in extraordinarily long hours in addition to full time jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And Alex is now. Why don't you explain where you are, Alex?
Okay, sure. So yeah, at the time I was at Harmonix. And so at the time I was working at Harmonix. That was my that was what I was doing during the day, and then I'd come home and work like crazy on Dark Scavenger. And eventually I ended up getting another job actually at where I'm currently at, which is at Other Ocean. And in the meantime, while I was transitioning from Harmonix to Other Ocean, I had a few months to just basically put full time work into the game, and got a lot done. But you know, I basically I've been working on this project probably every night, including work nights, and every weekend since October. I don't remember the last time I've had a day off. So, but yeah,
You don't need those.
I needed it. No, I don't need those, right? I didn't get into the game industry for days off.
Right. Yeah, you're also, where actually are you located, Alex? This may be, Yeah, go ahead.
I'm in the furthest place from anything ever, also known as Newfoundland or St. John's in Newfoundland. It's an amazing, amazing place, but good luck trying to get to me. Anyone ever?
Yeah, Elder Geek works, you know, internationally too. I mean, Mons, who is one of our editors, is in Norway. But yeah, and we're just trying to run a site with running with time schedules. I can't imagine what making a game with conflicting time zones must be like.
Well, like up until March, we were all in the Eastern time zone.
Oh, okay. It's only been lately, when the project nears completion, that Alex has
hit
the USA
one direction, and I go 3 hours the other direction.
Oh, it's really fantastic too, because you know, as a lot of people work on the project, you know, when they get off from work or that kind of thing. The funny thing is that when said people start working on the project, I'm usually trying to get in bed, and that's when that's when I'm flooded with emails that keep me up for another 3 hours.
You don't need
to. So, yeah, I didn't get in the game industry for sleep. There's a pattern. There's a pattern here.
Yeah, we're making a list. It's good for people that want to get into independent game development. This is the stuff you're never going to see again.
Sleep, days off, your family. Did I take that too far? Sorry.
So you've kind of hinted at, you know, you're building towards release here. You haven't given us necessarily a specific time frame. Do you have a concrete street date for Dark Scavenger yet?
We're looking at near the end of August. That's our goal.
Mm-hmm.
And we will keep you updated as we get closer to that goal. But we're looking to have it out within the next couple months. And that is for certain.
Okay. And do you have a figure or a cost for it yet?
Well,
you'll
it's.
Notice that I'm keeping very silent during these particular questions.
Okay. Duly noted, Jim.
Yes. Maybe we should come back to this question at another time.
Okay, we plan on following up with you guys, so don't worry. It's okay. Is it just a matter of one cost versus another, or are you currently trying to decide between a free release or a cost release at this point?
Okay. So actually, I can tell you that. In fact, we are currently looking at releasing the game for $15.
Okay.
That is our goal. We got like for example, the game should be roughly about 6 to 8 hours for about one playthrough.
Okay.
But once again, our game is meant to be played more than once, and also. Yeah, a lot went into this. So so I guess those are the details. Subject to change. But yes.
Okay. A little asterisk then. Duly noted.
Sure.
But for EGs, expect Dark Scavenger sometime within the time frame of this August, perhaps later, whenever it's ready and you guys are satisfied with the final product, for prospectively around $15, subject to change, but we will keep you posted, and we will be meeting Cyber Games in the future for a follow-up coverage here. We don't want to let these guys go or Dark Scavenger go, but that's all I have for you guys. So any final comments from you, Alex or Jim?
And then there's silence.
Yeah, and then there was silence. Play Raven with Fair.
Oh, well,
okay.
Yes, and yes. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for showing up.
Coming back to the future.
Absolutely. We're not going to let you guys get away. So there you guys go. Dark Scavenger, expect it soon for possibly $15. But that was it for this iteration of Elder Speak Interviews. For the site, I'm Gav, and we will be seeing you, hopefully not so long until the next one, but next one we'll see you.
For sure. Thanks again, Gavin.